This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. I think I already told you a few months ago I was driving to a funeral in Cashel. When I got to Mallow, my back was demanding I get out and walk. As a result, and completely accidentally, I wandered into Mallow Castle Town Park. All 9.5 hectares, 23.5 acres. The entrance is in Mallow Town, the ruined castle with roots of the 12th century. 24,000 trees planted between 2020 and 2024. The very fine old trees, the 2.5 miles, the 3.5 kilometres stretch of the Blackwater, the 18th century new Mallow Castle, the unique herd of white deer walking through new and old woods, ending up in Lover's Leap. It's worth a special trip to Mallow. And if, like me, you happen to be passing through, it's a perfect place to stretch your legs. There is no place like it anywhere else that I know about. With help from Claire Barr of Mallow Municipal Officer and four people who agreed to get up this morning a long time before sunrise and spend 3 hours with me to hear one of the great phenomena of nature, the Dawn Chorus. Here at 5 o'clock, I'm joined by historian Kevin Myers, by member of Cork County Council, Ronan Sheehan, fisherman Kevin Healy and forester John Casey. A Dawn Chorus programme without an ornithologist. The NPWS staff are busy with the Black Guillemot survey. Just luxuriate in this phenomenal feature of nature. Today's programme was recorded on March the 30th, at the beginning of the strongest season of birdsong in April and May. Your comment on anything you hear this morning for future programmes, write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. You can email franklewismangerton @gmail.com. Text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-7123-666. To begin, we're at the entrance to the park. Ronan, here, close to the town, back in the day, fellas weren't always happy with the kind of pint they got.
Yeah, my father or his father would have taught him about... There was lots of pubs just down in Bridge Street, just behind us. There was one pub called Mrs. Hyde, and I think she would have been part of the whole Castle Port that... The Hydes seem to be a famous family down there. But she used to have people that would used to be travelling and staying over the pub, which happened in lots of places. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you'd get your pint. It wasn't pulled away. It was pulled out. It was out of a barrel. And she'd put whatever it was, whether it was a pint or whatever, into it and serve it that way. So when the travellers were there one day and put the pint up on top of the counter, so he took a little sip out of the pint in her and... He felt something inside in the pint. So, lo and behold, he looked into the pint and there was a little mouse inside in the pint. So he said, come here, Mrs. Hyde. So he says, there's a mouse in my pint. So Mrs. Hyde duly obliged and picked the mouse up by the tail and threw it out and put it into the bin and gave the man back his pint. And he was looking at her and then she said, what's wrong with you? And he goes... You give me back the pint, you know? And he goes, and are you not happy?
Yeah.
Right? And he says, no, I'm not happy. And she says, you're some contrary man. She says, you're not happy with the mouse in it and you're not happy with the mouse out of it.
Kevin Myers, Mallow was important because of its position.
That's right, yeah. Mallow became Mallow. Mallow became a town because of its strategic position at the River Blackwater. Like, I mean, in the many centuries before, you had bridge crossings here. You had a necessity to cross from north to south, south to north. Mm-hmm. Accessing the southern ports of County Cork was very important in the very early days of the Norman settlement here. So one of the few places along the river here that you could cross was here at the town, an area which is known locally as the Horse's Water. So that's down below us here. And it became strategically important from a military point of view. The Normans were quick to spot that. And it was from there that you had fortifications built, and was from that you had a town and a manor developed.
Kevin Healy, the headquarters of Mallow Trout Anglers Club, the bridge bar is close by us here.
There's a sign in there, it says, do all lawyers fish or are all fishermen lawyers? So take your pick.
And you have a special trophy going on to this day. Tell me about that.
Dan Kelly was a local, very popular angler, very friendly man. And any time he went fishing, he always came home with a story that he lost a walloper. And the walloper being the biggest fish in the Blackwater. And this was going on for years and years. So when he passed away, we decided that we'd have a trophy in his honour. So a local man carved out a trout from wood and that is presented every year now for any fella that catches a big trout.
Oh,
and
I see.
It's called the Walloper of the Year.
So it isn't for a fella telling a story then?
No, not.
John, a tree you have highlighted here, beech, is one of our finest trees. It looks very impressive on parkland. It was used, to make furniture, among other things, and all sorts of stories associated with it.
Yeah, it's great, actually. Beech tree is a wonderful tree. It's not actually native to Ireland, but it's been here now, well, essentially as long as the Normans, which is coincidentally what the castle is. So it's a very useful tree. It's very tall, it's very strong, it has a very fine timber that is used for carving. But the other thing, of course, is it's shade tolerant, so it can grow underneath other trees. So say, for example, you had an oak woodland, you could have beech growing underneath it and coming along, and then because of the leaves to come down, the leaves themselves come down quite heavily and stay on the ground. That means then that there's a lot of funguses, there's a lot of insects there. The insects then lead for the birds themselves. Yeah. So yeah, it's the original circular economy, I suppose.
And it's a tree that, although I think we regard it as one that was always here, it was actually introduced.
That's right. It's not native. It's normally in mainland Europe and southern England. But again, like I said, it was probably just after Norman times it was introduced here. But it's so widespread at this stage. It's a little like sycamore in that matter.
What kind of age can it reach?
You're looking at certainly about 200 years. Mm-hmm. Generally what happens with the beech trees is the rooting system gives away first. So this is why after a really big wind, you often see one or two large beeches down. A lot of the beeches were planted as part of the old estates, which would mean that they're about 150 to 200 years old. So if you do have mature beech near your house, I'd be a little cautious. But having said that, you can underplant beside them and get other trees going.
Kevin, people have lived in Mallow for a very long time.
That's right, they have, yeah. Even before you had any settlement here in Norman times, as in around 1180, 1170, 1180, there's evidence up here in what's known as the Deer Park. There is remains of the old Liss Ring Fort, and obviously it was an important part and an important place for settlement. Mm-hmm. But certainly, immediately post-Normans, the Fitzgeralds of Desmond were very quick to spot the importance, the value of this area.
Did I come across an earlier reference of a Neolithic settlement going back 3,700 BC along the N73 near Mallow?
There was, yeah, which was recently excavated. Well, it was excavated over the last 5-6 years and surveyed. In fact, it has featured in our own Mallow Field Club journal on two occasions, the findings of a very important Neolithic settlement where you had a lot of settlement and a lot of activity, as in forge and so on. There was road realignment work done there over the last number of years, and the entire area was surveyed. Oh, I suppose it took 5-6 years to complete the job.
And I mean, among other things, they found pottery and stone tools and charred grain. So and all sorts of things.
Quern stones and the like, yeah.
Kevin, for the vast majority of your 76 years, the Blackwater has been very important for you.
Indeed. We're very lucky to have a river flowing through the town, and therefore competition fishing was very much the norm since the 50s, or even further back, the 40s. You would have a crowd gathering here at the bridge of up to 100 anglers, and there was they'd come from all over County Cork, and it was the general pastime of most people. And even in leisure times, people would walk down the banks of the river bringing their fishing rod with them. They wouldn't even have boots, they'd just fish off of the bank, you know.
And you're a very regular visitor to the river.
All the time. I've met it now since I was about 6 or 7 years of age.
So every day?
Well, the season goes from February to September, and then it's closed for the winter months. Yeah.
And with the trout anglers, I mean, you have gone through all the officerships.
Well, I started innocently getting roped into being a secretary.
Yeah.
And then I progressed up the ladder, and so now I'm at the final stage, which is the president, and that means you get a few anglers at your funeral.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. John, lime trees here as well, associated with avenues, with great estates, great straight lines.
Well, I suppose the lime trees themselves, they're fantastic trees. They grow really well along the sides. They're quite dense. The big thing about them, I suppose, is the sap rising. So what's happening now at the moment is you have the water being pulled up from the ground as the trees wake up, and then you have the sugar circulating in the trees. But this sugar then is eaten by aphids, and the excess sugar that they produce is the honeydew that then coats the leaves, and this brings in more flies and insects. Flies and insects bring in the birds then, like the kind of the cold tit and others, and this is what is such a great source then of food in the springtime for these birds. So, you know, it's a, again, it's this kind of trees wake up, start producing sugar, sugar produces insects, insects will benefit the trees. Mm-hmm. So it's called phenology. Mm-hmm. It's basically the sequencing of life events every year.
I'm beginning to hear some little twittering, and it's what is it? It's 5:30. Some little twittering away in the distance, so something is disturbed. One of the things that I've associated with lime trees, when the very young leaf, the very fresh leaf, like a salad, I mean, it's something you can have in a sandwich. Lovely, lovely taste of it.
Yeah, you could. It wouldn't be my first choice, though, to be honest with you, but it can be done.
If you had that pint, you'd probably be delighted.
Well, it'd take the edge off it anyway, that's what I'm sure.
Is there any great use of the lime wood?
No, not these days, really, I suppose. It wouldn't be very much use. It's more for decoration than anything else. Yeah. Again, it would depend on how the trees were grown, how straight they were. In avenues like this, they tend to kind of spread out rather than up initially. Yeah. So there's lots of knots and that kind of thing. So it wouldn't be huge. Yeah. But in other places where they would grow the tree straight, yes, you can do it for furniture and that. Mm.
So we're moving from the entrance. As I say, we're beginning to have some little bit of bird song away in the distance, and we'll talk to you from not very far away in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Out in the hours of the dawn chorus, it's now about 5:35, and I can't hear anything in the background. I can hear the traffic, as you probably heard in our first stop there, of the town of Mallow just close by us in the background. We're walking into Mallow Castle Park. The dawn chorus, strongest, as you know, in April and May. Best in the hour before sunrise, which on March the 30th, when we recorded, was 7:15. That's sunrise. On our broadcast day, April the 25th, it'll be an hour earlier. We started recording this morning at 5, over 2 hours before sunrise, so we wouldn't miss anything. We're now beside the ruined Mallow Castle, being extensively conserved at the moment. Kevin Myers, in 1185, why did John, King of England, order the construction of the first castle in Mallow?
Because he had an aggressive policy of colonisation going on at the time, post, again, the Norman conquest. And you had identification by the settlers of strategically important points, which we referred to earlier, mm-hmm. such as Mallow. And very early on, there was castle building going on here. And in fact, for somebody who's interested in architectural history, particularly of castle building in the country, Mallow is the place to come, because you're spoiled for choice. Over here at the far end of the site, there is a small fragment of castle building overhanging the cliff looking down towards the river. And that, it is generally agreed, was the first castle built here, probably by the Roaches or by the Fitzgeralds. That was recently restored and conserved by the Office of Public Works because it was in severe danger of tumbling down into the meadow below by the river. So that's, you know, evidence of one site of the original castle. But following the Desmond Rebellion then in the late 1500s, you had a wipeout. They had a massive fortification here guarding the river crossing. That was all but completely destroyed, either by themselves as they retreated or by the incoming Elizabethan settlers. But in any event, what you ended up with here then was a new modern, what was by then very modern type of castle building. It's known as a fortified house. So the ruin of what we call the old castle here now is standing here to our right. And it was built probably around 1598, 1599, but certainly by the early 17th century, it was up and going.
Mallow was something of a frontier town, wasn't it, between the new Anglo-Norman settlers and the, I suppose, the Irish to the west.
The Irish to the west, yeah. Westward towards Kerry, as you well know. It was a frontier town. It was very close to here. You still had the McDonoughs, the O'Callaghans, the McAuliffes, far from friendly towards the new arrangement of the Munster plantation. So it was a place that the new castle here in Mallow didn't last too long before you had the Confederate Rebellion in the 1640s and Mallow came under attack. So Mallow remained under attack for many years right up to the end of the 17th century.
And we'll take that up later. Kevin Healy, the landlords generally regarded rivers or lakes on their land as their exclusive reserve. Fish only on their say-so. How was that with the Jeffsons, who were landlords here for, was it 400 years?
Yeah, well, the Blackwater would be one of the best rivers in Ireland for salmon fishing. So that was their main attraction, and they'd have guests over for the privilege of fishing for wild salmon. The Jeffsons were good to the trout anglers because they allowed us to fish for trout.
Only trout? You couldn't fish for salmon?
No. To fish for salmon in those days was an expensive game, and trout fishing by its nature is amateur rather than a paying sport. So really we were getting the crumbs off of the table, if you like.
So you never went down to fish for salmon?
Not here. There's plenty trout fishing here.
John Casey, you were telling me about a very interesting project as we were walking along there, about the planting of crocuses.
Yes, just in front of the castle here, I'd say for about the last 7 or 8 years, Mallow Rotary have been planting crocuses here with the local school kids from the 4 or 5 different schools. They come up every year to plant them. The idea being that you can plant these crocuses and then in the January, start of February, to come out. And they're purple. And the idea was to mark World Polio Day. So you have all these kids coming along. They're the beneficiary of these polio vaccinations across the world. And then every February, then these crocuses come up. And the great thing is, every child in Mallow schools that have come by here in the last couple of years have gone, that's the flower I planted. So there's a wonderful field of purple up here in the end of January, start of February. And it's all down to the school kids.
Ronan, the sugar factory, I mean, coming in from the Kerry side, the kind of introduction to Mallow used to be the lights and smoke and so on from the sugar factory. Its closure must have caused a lot of hardship here.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely did, sure. It was a fantastic employer.
How many worked there at its height?
I think during the campaign between Éireann Foods and the beef factory, they could be 1,300 or 1,400.
And at 5:45, I hear some twittering of birds in the background. Kevin, the animosity between the new Anglo-Norman settler and the native Irish came to a peak in 1689.
You could say it was kind of one final pop by the native Irish out to the west here, encouraged to come in by the remnants of King James's forces and have a go at the remaining settlement of the Munster plantation, if you like, here in Mallow. There had been almost a century at this stage, certainly 50, 60 years of warfare, turbulence, uprising, and a lot of the English were spent. There were some returning, some sold out their lands, left and went back. But the native Irish decided to have a go, led by one of the MacDonaghs, came in here into Mallow. Down below us here is the town park, which was then known as the Long Meadow, and it was part of the Castle Demesne. So it resulted in a ferocious battle.
There were huge armies.
I mean, the English were still supported by a lot of Danish marksmen and soldiers and brought them into town, and it was a very, as you say, a very bloody encounter. MacDonagh and his forces were routed, and there was said to be a terrible loss of life, up to 400 right. killed and wounded and so on.
And very few on the other side.
Yeah. They were way better equipped. They were more skilled soldiers, nothing like what was ever seen here in the past.
Kevin Healy, I heard a story about an African prince on a day visiting Killarney, out fishing on the River Flesk. The ghillie, who had a foul tongue, was warned to be on his best behaviour. Your Highness, and Your Highness this, and Your Highness that, and Your Majesty. And that was fine until the prince got stuck in a salmon and doing everything wrong, and the ghillie getting more and more excited. Eventually the prince jerks the bait out of the salmon's mouth, and a string of expletives from the big ghillie questioning the legitimacy of the coloured gentleman, among others. Nothing like that ever happened here, I presume.
No, I'm afraid not. That would be in salmon waters, as you mentioned. The salmon fishing, it was a premium. Like downriver now, you had the Duke of Devonshire controlling the flow of salmon up the Blackwater. He had a weir there, and he had a licence to take as many fish as he wished. And all up the system, anyone that had salmon fishing, they exploited it. So,
John Casey, one of the trees beside us here, the horse chestnut, a fine tree of parkland, but not a good tree to park under at this time of the year.
No, I suppose you're looking at the aphids, of course, are the sugar's coming off them, and it's falling down and can actually stay in the bonnet of the car quite badly. The other thing, I suppose, is, well, depending on the time of the year, you can also get conkers coming off it, and they're not going to bruise your car, but they're certainly going to be doing a little bit of it.
The horse chestnut was a great sport. I mean, I don't know, is it practiced as much as it used to be?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I remember as a child now, everybody played conkers. at certain times of the year. Like, you know, it used to be a big sport. One of my kids did mention that a couple of years ago that they had a conquer competition in school, which, you know, is probably dying out. And a lot of those kind of entertainments, they're getting rarer. It's something that I think brings children a small bit back into the woodland, or into the outside at least. Mm-hmm. And they're the sort of things that should be encouraged.
Am I right? Were the conquerors also used to produce some pharmaceutical product?
You have me there now, I'd have to say.
I knew a fine horse chestnut in Killarney. It was a great courting place. There was a kind of a bough on the tree and you could sit down there and so on, you know.
I'd say everybody can find a spot if you're suitably motivated.
But it's a lovely tree. I mean, where is it native of?
Mainland Europe, really.
Yeah.
As much as anything else. Yeah. It's not native to here. It's one of those things, you know, where, like the sycamore, like the beech, they've been here for a very long time. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even recognise that they're not native, you know. They have a huge amount. Again, going back to what I was mentioning earlier on about the sugars and the sap and the aphid, mm-hmm. they're huge. Huge food source for insects, and insects mean birds.
Ronan, stealing chocolate crumb from the sugar factory.
Yeah, well, I don't know, was it ever regarded as stealing, really? You know, it was a rite of passage, really. It was the most gorgeous I can still taste in my mouth, and it used to be rock hard, and we'd, as gangs of young fellas, I'm afraid to admit it, if it could land me in court or anything, you know, but we used to go down lower Beecher Street, and there was different ways of going into the back of the factory, and it used to be on a belt inside, and you'd be listening to the sound of it coming, and in you'd run with your plastic bags underneath the belt, and the chocolate would be hopping into that bag, and it used to be hot, some, like, you know, on occasion it would go right through the bag and you'd leave a trail of it, like.
Okay, we're going to move on.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Walking in Mallow Castle Town Park in the hours around sunrise, it's just after 6 o'clock, and there's quite a bit of birdsong in the background at this stage. Today's programme was recorded on March the 30th. Your story on Mallow Castle Park for future programmes. Text 083 300 3300. Ring 066 712 3666. We've walked down from the castle to some of the 24,000 trees planted in the park in recent years. Forester with Tagus, John Casey. We passed along the way a magnificent oak that you were pointing out, and you've also planted a lot of oak in the park.
Yes, so the oak I was talking about is just at the crossroads there at the bridge. It's a magnificent oak. I mean, really, any time you pull up to the traffic, it's worth having a look at. And sometimes people don't look at it that much. Oaks, what you once be called, was the king of the forest. You know, they're beautiful trees.
Why the king of the forest?
Well, I suppose they're lasting so long. Oak trees grow a very long time. They're usually what's called pioneer species. You have succession species, and then you have the species that the forest finally becomes, and that tends to be the oak tree.
And they feed so many others and so many plants and animals.
Oak trees could support up to 400 different species of insects, bacteria, fungi, birds. Then you go on to the mammals, like, you know, squirrels, pine martens. It's like a food court. That's the only way to describe it. Yeah. You know, it's incredible, the tree.
It's wonderful. I mean, we were told at one time that the whole country was covered in oak.
Well, not quite. I suppose people talk about bog oak. The oak that's up in the peatlands was actually Scots pine, a lot of it. Pine and sylvestris. Mm-hmm. But all of this area here down by the rivers, you know, the Blackwater, the Shore, the Lee, all of those would have been oak woodlands. You know, like, if you look at the old maps from the 16th and 17th century, you would have seen big load of oak trees along those areas. So it was only when drainage systems came in that they started felling the oak. And of course, the rivers like the Blackwater, the rivers like the more waterways of their time. So a lot of timber literally went down the river.
Member Cork County Council community activist Ronan Sheehan, the amazing coincidence that happens in life, an experience your grandfather had.
Yeah, like, my grandfather was born in Mallow in the workhouse in 1917 and had to go to Jersey for work. He went over with his wife Julie Foley, a Mallow girl, and so they went in the late 30s, and my father and his sister were born in Jersey during the occupation. And over there, he, you know, he knows a couple of of German officers, etc. And he recognised one of them as a fellow there.
It was Jersey was the only occupied part of the United Kingdom, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And this man, they was calling him Mallow, they was calling him the Black Knight because he was wearing a leather jacket. He was here during the building of the beet factory, the sugar factory. You know, there was engineers and that from Germany and Czechoslovakia at the time. And so he built up the courage one day and to confront him, not confront him, approach him, I suppose, and spoke to him, said that he was from Mallow, and he says, the Black Knight, you know, he says, I won't say teary, but he wanted to be someplace else rather than in Jersey. And he said to him, he says, what I wouldn't give now to be in Lover's Leap, the German officer said, you know, so because he had two sons fighting in the front line in Europe as well, and I suppose it was a human story, but it's amazing the way you go all the way there and then occupied, you know, so it's a nice story.
Story and Kevin Myers, do we know how the land attached to the castle was used in the 12th and 13th centuries?
Well, we do know a little bit about it insofar as that once the settlement was established here, there was a lot of agriculture going on in the manor lands. I mean, the entire estate that they had was some 6,000 acres. However, what you had then was the immediate manor of the town of Mallow, and there was intensive agriculture and husbandry going on within the manor here. It was commented on certainly in the 17th and into the 18th century, the level of intensive farming that was going on here. But as to the actual detail, there's a lot yet to be revealed about how the work went on here over the centuries, because a lot of the archives of the castle have been preserved and are now in UCC and are currently being properly classified and archived. In the years to come, we're looking forward to a lot more information coming out about how life was lived here in the manor of Mallow.
Are they very extensive, the archives?
They're reasonably extensive, even though they cover, naturally enough, of course, they don't go back far enough. There isn't enough information about back, say, in the early years of the manor, but once you got into the 18th and into the 19th century, there is very extensive archives on the place itself.
A lifelong angler, Kevin Healy, a particular highlight was winning the team event in the Munster Angling Championship on the Bandon River.
A local angler, Dick Willis, he was very shrewd, and he figured that if we got 20 fish between us, we would win it. And true to form, we had 22. We were all to catch 5 each anyway, and after a long day flogging the river, I got my quota.
You were just on the knob, were you?
On the knob, and had to run 2 miles back to the bridge in case I'd be disqualified. The first fella I met of the team, mentioning no names, he'd no fish.
Oh, nothing at all.
So I said, things are looking bad. And the next fella had 3. And Dick brought up the rear with 14. So we won the Munster Championship that year, and it was the highlight of my fishing outset.
John, we've just crossed one of the tributaries of the Blackwater and on the bridge that I think Ronan was saying came from the railway station. But of course, there are alder and willow there.
There are. Alder and willow are great trees. You know, they can survive flooding on a regular basis. So here in the Blackwater, you often see flooding that comes across from the river, over the bank, even onto the main road as well. The alder itself, it can survive being submerged for a period of time. Most other trees, after, say, a week, will start rotting. But alder will survive that. And it has other great abilities as well. So it's got bacteria in its rooting system, and that allows it to fix nitrogen. So it fixes nitrogen out of the air and draws it into the soil, and that then actually enriches the soil around it. So you get this combination of the silt that's coming from the river, and then you have the alder that's producing over years and years, enriching the soil. Soil like this along by the river, this is why one of the reasons why it's so fertile. And of course, it was a great source and is a great source of pollen and nectar for the insects as well early on in the season. So you have the insects that are coming out, and then the real important thing about that, I suppose, is for migratory birds. If the insects and the numbers haven't arrived by the time the birds arrive, well, then everything's going to be out of sync. So the willow has this really important role at just this time of the year.
Ronan, the purchase and investment in Mallow Castle Town Park must be significant since Cork County Council bought it in 2011. What made it possible for Cork County Council to buy it, though? I mean, it seems a huge investment between the new castle, old castle, the land.
It was really significant, and even at the time, you know, and there was a lot of discussion about money and all that, I can't remember figures now, but it was reasonable, you know, and it was something really important. We'd say that Mallow people themselves and the council or whatever, you know, said, like, for the opportunity to have ownership of it and then to decide what to do that would benefit the town. And then at the same time then you had Castle Park Estate, housing estate was being built around the same time, and developer John Barry was involved in that, and then he was after acquiring the land coming down to the river, I suppose almost just beyond this point, and he developed that.
So one of the attractions was that it was possible to build housing down here.
And he was going handing over that part then to the council, so it just, the whole thing just came together, and that allowed then from the walk to go from the Nazi pub all the way down with the help of Dairy Gold. The council also had to buy the town park at the time, which for years and years there was a 100-year lease at one stage, because I remember in the town council that coming up. So it was just the whole thing, and for the notion that you could have from the navigation road all the way to Lover's Leap, I don't know how many miles, it's 3 or 4 miles of river for the people of Mallow that they could use as their own now, and people would have been using it down through the years, but maybe shouldn't have been in here at times, but no, it was. So it was, I think,
it's
the most significant.
It's an amazing facility for a town of Mallow's size. Yeah. I mean, there's no comparable one that I can think of.
Absolutely. It is like, no matter what town you go into, like, this is something that's really special, that you could have this sort of amenity, this beauty, where you can go, whether it is fishing or walking the river, and you'd see the wildlife on the river and the flash of the turquoise of kingfishers and otters, and it's amazing. It is the place where I just love the most, looking into the river and knowing that it belongs to the people of Mallow Town and North Cork region and all that.
Kevin Myers, as I said earlier at the beginning of the programme, I bumped into the park. I mean, you could pass through Mallow and not know the park was there, or the castle, or the deer herd. I know there are some signs, but I was looking for a place to walk. You know, I just by accident found it.
That is true, yeah. And indeed, you'd find it by accident, as you say now. However, a number of years ago, many, many people passed through the town of Mallow, came to spend time in the town of Mallow, and didn't see and couldn't see much of what is here now, because it was closed up, it was walled in, it was gated, and it wasn't possible to see what was going on or what was available here by way of an amenity.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county, serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
At 5 this morning, we started the Dawn Chorus Walk around Mallow Castle Town Park. Now at it's about 6:25 to be exact. We're down on the bank of the River Blackwater by the main bridge on the road. As you can hear in the background, you can hear the traffic, even at this hour of the morning, the main road from Mallow to Cork.
There was a local man who used to walk down the opposite bank to where we are now, and he spotted this very unusually large trout. Even he thought it was a salmon, and he told my father about it, and we went down one evening. It was a summer's evening, I was school going at the time, and we waited till dark, and eventually my father hooked into him, and biggest thing we ever saw as regards fish on the black water. So he was playing him, and he wouldn't trust me to net him, so there was another gentleman below us salmon fishing, and he called him up to net the fish. And in the excitement, both anglers and the netter, they netted more stones than the fish with the excitement. But eventually, anyway, after a long battle, landed the fish, and it was a 5-pound trout, which is exceptional for the Blackwater.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest fish I ever saw in it, anyway. Yeah,
great catch. Ronan, there were horror stories of the flooding in Bridge Street before the flood relief scheme.
It used to be almost excitement for us on the other side of town, and not realising, only when you become an older man, realising, you know, the hardship that these people experience. I mean, it used to go up to above head height in Bridge Street, and that it went on forever and ever. And then the fabulous flood relief scheme came in. And
what
now,
did that involve? How did it do
well,
that?
There was huge works being done, and there was big underground work, culverts put underground, and then you have the flood barriers here on the bridge and on the park road side, you know.
But you have a barrier here. I mean, where does the water go?
Well, it goes down to Kilavonan from Y, maybe. I don't know. It goes down that direction. But water has to go someplace. But it spreads out across the land, but at least it's not in residential areas.
And there's tremendous bird song at the moment, but I don't know whether you're picking it up, because between the traffic and the wind, it's difficult for us to pick it up in the sound equipment. Just as we were coming down earlier a few minutes ago, a heron took off just on the bank of the river below us. John, the tree here, did you mention Norway maple?
Yeah, there's Norway maple planted along by the footpaths here. And these footpaths, you know, there was always a path running down by the river. And then when the council took over the piece of ground here, they put in these new concrete paths. Beautiful wide paths now that, you know, people can walk, but you can have buggies, you can have wheelchairs. It's nice and flat. And this pathway then with the maple are shading it oftentimes from the wind, but, you know, the odd fortunate day it can be from the sun as well, so it works out kind of well.
Why Norway maple?
I suppose it's a nice tree, there's a nice colour off it, particularly in the autumn time, you know, when you have the kind of chlorophyll drawing out. Leaves are actually red. It's only when the green is there during that particular time of the year. Mm. So that red is always there underneath the leaf. So in the autumn time, then you have this beautiful flash of colour. It's here in St. Castle Park Estate beside it. And I suppose this pathway here with the maple and that kind of thing, it's one of the things I mentioned earlier on to you, that during COVID, this is a godsend to people. It was within 2 or 5 kilometres of your people's home. You could walk down here, and a load of people discovered the woodland and the park down here at that time. They're all familiar with the park road and the football pitch, but maybe not the other side of the bridge.
You must have so many stories of the planting here.
Yeah. I mean, it was very good. I mean, what happened was that Mallow Development Partnership approached me and were asking for some advice on what the options could be, and I made a suggestion about the woodland, and we brought it to the council, and, you know, they gave us a really good fair hearing, and we went with it. Putting in 20 acres of oak woodland and birch in the middle of a town is a fantastic bit of foresight by the people involved, I'd have to say, and it's going to be a legacy for everybody in the town into the future.
Indeed, huge. Kevin, the reason the two castles were built was because, as you told us earlier, the critical importance of the location, but as well it was on the bank of the Blackwater River, and all sorts of uses of the river, I mean getting fresh water, dumping, as well as fish.
Indeed there was, yeah. Where we're standing now is at that critical point, though, that we talked about earlier. This is just to our left here, to my left, is the Horses of Water. So it's where the river has naturally always did narrow slightly downstream of the bridge, enabling crossing over the river for much of the year. As you can see now, we have a fine four-arch stone bridge, which was built about 1854, 1855, because the remnants of an older bridge is here just to our right, the 12-arch bridge that was built around 1712. And a lot of that bridge, talking about the floods, it reminds me, a lot of that bridge was blown away in one of the big floods of 1853. So it wasn't quite completely destroyed, but it was harmed enough to the point of where the present-day bridge had to be built.
Yeah. Kevin Healy, along the river, close by the bridge, this is a place with a lot of history, I suppose, for fishermen.
Yes, indeed. And the convenience of it, again, river going right through the town. And in olden days, boat banks, people would be going down in the summer's evening and fishing there. Everyone had their own little spot, and they'd go off in the summer's evening and fish and come home with a half dozen trout. And back in the day, we were reared and trout, you know. We weren't just catching them for competitions or fun. We were eating them, and it was a nice thing to get a plate of fresh fish.
I was reading something from the school's collection about a legend associated with Mallow Castle. Colonel Jeffson, who built the new castle on Mallow, ran short of money.
They always seem to be short of money anyway.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter which one of them was involved. But yeah, this fella, it seems, he ran seriously short of money. He was occupied the ruined castle we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
And he was told there was a visitor to see him of a night. This guy appeared into him, and he offered to get him out of trouble with his financial difficulties, produce some gold coins. And he said to sort out a lot of his problems for him. But there was one condition that the stranger laid down, and that was he had a pet white rat, and that the white rat would have to be looked after by Jeffson and kept in the dining room, kept by his side, particularly during meals. And Jeffson agreed to it, of course, and got his money anyway and sorted out his problem. But for years afterwards, he was being slagged a lot by the fact that he had to have this blinking rat beside him anytime he was sitting down to have a meal. And he got fed up of it anyway, and he banished the rat at some stage. And of course, true to form, the mysterious stranger reappeared, and it emerged that Jeffson hadn't kept his word. So the stranger grabbed Jeffson up, and he took him under his oxter and flew out the window with him, apparently. And it seems that the window in question was often repaired, but It never remained repaired. It was always left open and left into the elements.
It's interesting. In the version of that story collected by Charlotte Nicharig, From Skara, County Cork, whose informant was a Mr. Coleman, who was 60 years old, of Gutmalira in County Cork. In that version of the story, it was a cat.
Oh, my God, is that right? Yeah. Maybe the cat finished off the rat.
Maybe that's what happened. John, Douglas fir, among the tallest trees in the country again.
Yeah, there's a couple of fine examples of Douglas fir further down the river here in what used to be called the Maplewood. But there's several Douglas fir. I suppose the biggest one probably is in Wicklow. It's about 60, 65 metres tall. They're magnificent trees. They're from
the Pacific coast of
North America, kind of going from Northern California up as far as Alaska. But they're beautiful trees, and particularly for timber trusses, they have this lovely red hue to the timber itself.
Kevin, I mean, so many changes to the landscape here over the years. To get a true idea how formidable it looked, it would be necessary to rebuild the moat that surrounded the castle.
Well, I'm not sure there was a moat. There may have been in the earlier Fitzgerald's castle. The area was probably moated, but it was more a fortification built on a rock, built on a cliff, which isn't very prominent here at the site of the castle, but the rock face is farther down. So it may not have been moated, but it was certainly very, very strongly fortified.
Listen to that bird song at the moment. Isn't it stunning?
Yeah. It's lovely.
It's stunning. Yeah. We're going to a break and the 10 o'clock news. But to play us out, don't adjust your radios. Just listen to the amazing bird song in the dawn chorus from Mallow Castle and Town Park.
Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Welcome back to our Dawn Chorus Walk in the 9.5 hectare, 23.5 acre Mallow Castle Town Park, listening to the bird song. It's just now about 5 to 7, coming up to 7 o'clock in the morning, about 15, 20 minutes before sunrise. We've been on the go since 5 o'clock. I've been guided around their town park by historian Kevin Myers, member of Cork County Council, Ronan Sheehan, fisherman Kevin Healy, and forester John Casey. Today's programme was recorded on March the 30th at the beginning of the strongest season of birdsong in April and May. Your comment on anything you hear this morning for future programmes, write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3300, or phone 066 712 3666. We're now at the new Mallow Castle, and now being extensively internally restored by Cork County Council. It should be a very special place when all that's finished. Kevin Myers,
the building began around 1836. They then, what was known as the Lord of the Manor, Charles Denimore Orlando Jeffson, he had ambitions to improve his status, and it was important that he be seen to have a fine house, a fine manor house, because the Blackwater Valley was heavily populated with very fine large houses and estates. And of course, he being the local lord of the manor, he had to measure up. But the trouble about it, yet again, was that by the late 1830s, he couldn't finish the job. He ran out of money, effectively. It wasn't until 1955, which was over 100 years afterwards, that the entire building was completed.
Bought in 1984 by American Michael and Judith McGinn. Kevin Healy, when McGinn had notions of having the fishing on the Blackwater here for American guests, you had a private meeting with him in the drawing room.
I did. He phoned, I don't know how he got my number, but he did anyway, and he wanted to see me about doing something for the anglers in Mallow. And I came down here to the castle and met him in his drawing room, and he outlined his plan, but I couldn't make any decision on my own, so I got some of the committee, and we met him again, and he said again that he wanted to do something for us. So it didn't really work out as such, because as I said before, salmon fishing is commercial, and he had a client downriver in Ballyduff using the waters as well, and the bit we'd get then would be after 6 o'clock in the evening.
So even for trout fishing you couldn't fish during the day?
Well, no, we could. Sorry, we could fish for trout fishing. I'm wearing my salmon hat now when to talk about the salmon.
Oh, you did fish for salmon then?
I did, yeah, and I was one of the founder members of the Mallow Salmon Club.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, there are two bodies.
There's two bodies, yeah. Actually, there was three. There was a course club as well for DS fishing.
So what agreement did you reach eventually?
Well, the way it finished up is we did the deal with the man from Ballyduff, paying him a subscription to fish, but we were getting the tin end of the wedge, really, because when the guests were finished at 6 o'clock, we could go in then, so it wasn't great. But anyway, he meant well.
Okay, so you agreed to disagree.
I
remember the wood panelled hallway in the New Mallow Castle from the 1980s. Ronan, the story of Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House, staying at Mallow Castle in the late 1980s.
Yeah, Tip O'Neill's father was born around the spa. And like, so the O'Neills would have been from here, you know, effectively. So,
he was like, coming, he was one of your own.
Oh, he was, yeah. And I mean, to be Speaker of the House, you know, I mean, it was amazing.
Third most important office in the States?
Yeah, and then coming home, you know, and I know he had connections in Donegal as well, but there was a civic reception for him inside in the castle here. Now, I wasn't there at it, but that was around the same time as when they were trying to take the flag. So, yeah, I mean, really important. And he'd have cousins in Mallow, and would be keeping up his name and all that, you know. There's a Michael O'Neill who'd be involved with the partnership as well now, and who'd be informing us the whole time of what's going on with the O'Neills. And Tip O'Neill's family would have come after and visited the town hall and the people in Mallow, you know. So, like, yeah.
Is there really still a connection?
Oh, there is, yeah. There's still a connection, and like, they're over in Boston, but they would, and their connection to Mallow is really strong and being kept alive. And
John, one of the things that stands out in the gardens here are the wonderful specimen yew trees, unusually tall for you.
Yes, I suppose what's really happened here is they've had the space to grow. You've a line of yew trees there over on one side, but then you have a couple of standalone. It was part of the landscaping, and as Kevin mentioned early on, a lot of it was to do with what now would be called bling wealth. If you wanted to show off your wealth, well, one of the ways to do it was to have manicured gardens. And of course, the other thing that it would do as well is having exotic trees in the garden. And part of this was a reflection of your wealth, but it was also a reflection how well travelled you were. So, you know, a lot of the gypsums would have served in the Royal Navy, and they would have been in the army, and they would have gone to different countries. So there was a big tradition there of bringing plants back and then planting them out. That's why you see it in a lot of the old estates.
The yew is amazing though, isn't it? I mean, it grows for 1,000 years, matures for 1,000 years, and is 1,000 years dying, and then regenerates from its roots.
Yeah, it's one of the trees that regenerates from its roots, so it's constantly turning over. It is the longest growing tree in Ireland by a long shot.
And also the wood that Robin Hood favoured for his bow and arrow.
Yes, yew itself, what he did with the longbows is it was kind of a slightly composite bow. You'd have yew on one side, and then you'd have more flexible wood on the other side. Mm-hmm. And it would give the strength and the actual kind of, I suppose, the kinetic energy to fire the longbow. Now, what happened, of course, was the lad that was doing the longbow, he ended up having an overdeveloped shoulder on one side because the pull of it was so high. You could be talking 80 pounds, maybe 100 pounds.
So you could start a new band of Robin Hood and his merry men here, and
you could do a little bit of that, or you know, you could end up playing darts as well, which is where that came from. Where people had to go to the butts every Sunday to practice with the bow, and then that moved later on to lads playing darts.
Kevin, during the Irish War for Independence, the town served as the headquarters for the North Cork Militia, also known as the North Cork Rifles, a unit of the Irish Republican Army, the IRA.
You had the famous raid on the barracks in Mallow. The British military barracks. It wasn't a very big barracks, not like east of us here in Fermoy or north in Buttevant, But in Mallow there was a small barracks, and the local unit of the IRA made a plan to raid it. Two of their members were actually doing work in the barrack at the time. They hatched a plan to raid the barracks. At the time, Liam Lynch was just operating south of here, out around the Moornabbey area, and himself, Ernie O'Malley, were involved, and they came in and worked out the plan. They took over the town hall the night before and succeeded early in the morning afterwards in breaking into the barracks and in taking whatever ammunition, guns, Hotchkiss machine gun, taking the lot. One of the British soldiers at the time on the morning was killed, and it was, from an IRA point of view, it was spectacularly successful. However, the downside, of course, was that within 24 hours you had a raid by then soldiers from the barracks in Butterfont mainly, and others locally came into town and basically had free rein, set fire to many parts of the town, many of the commercial premises of the town, terrorised the town people. It was an awful night.
Bowing, belling, dancing, drinking, breaking windows, damning, sinking, ever raking, never thinking, lives the rakes of Mallow. Spending faster than it comes, beating bawds, whores and duns, Bacchus, rare forgotten sons, lives the rakes of Mallow. Ronan, here by the Grand Mansion, it's appropriate to remember the rakes of Mallow.
The spa house and the spa water, where there used to be healing powers and visitors used to come. It's drew the rakes, you know. These were fellas keeping an eye out on maybe older ladies that were coming to the town for healing or whatever, but they'd try and take advantage and try and get wine and dine themselves. All the bay windows in Mallow, it would have been all part of that, of the local people looking out the bay windows at the carry-on that was going on a few years ago. When last time I was in the council, we got the Notre Dame marching band to come to Mallow. They were playing an American football game in Dublin the following year, because as one of their songs, they played the Rakes of Mallow.
John, there's a Hollamoak here on the grounds of the Newcastle as well.
There's a couple of different oaks around. There's Hollamoak here, there's also what's called Irish Oak, and there's English Oak as well. So you've Quercus Roper and Quercus Bedunklet. To be honest, the English Oak and Irish Oak, it's just different variations of the same oak. Yeah. Holland Oak is slightly different.
Very different. I mean, it's evergreen.
It is an evergreen oak. So it makes for a very nice hedgerow. You can actually train it into a hedgerow itself. Mm. And then you can also have it as a mainstay, a standalone tree as well.
It's a Mediterranean plant, I believe.
It is. Yeah. You find it quite a lot in northern Portugal and in northern Spain as well, in Galicia, Asturias, up that area.
Did I hear again, I'm probably wrong, that it was associated with cork making?
Yes. What you have is they take off the bark of the oak. They harvest it about every 7 to 12 years. It has the ability, unusual ability, that it can almost be ring-barked, the tree itself, and the bark will go back. So every 7 to 12 years, they take off the bark, and that's actually made into the corks for wine. On the other hand then as well, you also have the kind of oak acorns that come off it, and they feed pigs underneath it. So you have, you know, that meat jamon that you have, that Spanish meat, and you have a different grading system. So you can have two oaks, three oaks, or four oaks, and it's indicator of how much time they spent grazing this oak, and you can taste it in the meat that they've been underneath, they've eaten the acorns for so long.
Sounds a bit better than having a rat in your pint anyway.
Absolutely. Or a cat beside you.
Okay, we're going to move on.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
A dawn chorus walk on the grounds of Mallow Castle Town Park since 5 a.m. It's now 7:20, just a few minutes after sunrise. We're looking down on Mallow's unique herd of white deer that are just across the field from us. Ronan, a strong connection with the Queen of England.
Yeah, it was the Queen of England. They were cousins of the Jeffersons and Narrys, and the white deer would have come from present from the Queen to, I think, her goddaughter, Elizabeth Narry. So that's where the original white deer came from. There was two.
So they're here from the end of the 16th, early 17th century.
Yeah. So it is amazing. And I suppose we always had a white deer here. I wasn't too sure that there wasn't other white deer all over Ireland when I was growing up, because this is the deer that we could see every day when we were, you know, on the other side of the river in the paddock or whatever.
Yeah. John, sweet chestnut, a special treat in October, roasted on an open fire, a little butter and salt and a pint of your favourite brew.
Yeah, you can, all right. The sweet chestnut that we have here, the chestnuts themselves wouldn't be that large because, well, it's a reflection of our environment. We don't have that many daylight hours, so they don't grow that big. Again, you go to Europe, particularly France and Spain, they do a big market in saving these chestnuts themselves.
And they're sold on streets and cities.
Very much
the world,
so. You buy them in a paper bag and you'll be eating them away. You get chestnuts here, they're just not that big. But what you have instead is, I suppose, you have jays collect them. Jays are known as the gardeners of the forest. So this bird collects these chestnuts and then they put them into little stockpiles, a bit like squirrels, and then promptly forget them. Some of them anyway. And what happens then is they end up as a small nursery where the trees grow out afterwards. They're nice. I mean, you know, the castanets, the little clickers that you probably remember from Spanish dance and that kind of thing, that's Castellana. And the Castellana sativa is a Spanish chestnut or sweet chestnut, and that's what the timber is made from, those little clippers. That's what it comes from.
My gosh. Yeah, they're wonderful. I know that picking them over the years, you get a good year and then you get poor years, but you can get them at quite a decent size.
Yeah, so they're called mast years, and you have them with acorns as well, and you have them with beech seed. So mast years on continental Europe usually happen every second or third year. But in Ireland, because just we're at the kind of the periphery of the zone in which these trees grow, so we might have a mast year every 4 or 5 years instead. So they're not as frequent.
Kevin Healy, the white deer are confined. High floods in the past have caused havoc for the white deer.
Yes, before the flood relief and that, and as Ronan said earlier on, when Bridge Street was flooded out, the flood used come in to the lower park of the deer park here, and it enabled deer to get out over the boundary wall. And I've actually saw a white deer crossing the black water and heading off for the mountain. Yeah.
So is that where you got the venison from? Did they escape?
No. This was legitimately got.
But the venison you were talking about was from these deer, was it?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
What do they like to eat?
They say you couldn't eat better than venison because it has no contaminants. Yeah. These deer feed on...
There's a fine stag just close by us now.
Yeah, he's obliging. He's coming
isn't
up
he?
No, they feed on roots and herbs and things, so their meat is pretty pure, you know.
Yeah. Very good. Kevin Myers, in your history of the early years of the town park, in the 2022 edition of the Mallow Field Club Journal, was there one aspect that particularly struck you?
Yeah, it was the fact that it belonged. See, we now have Bridge Street, the street that led from the town onto the river and over the bridge. However, Bridge Street wasn't always there. And what struck me was that this castle and its demesne lands stretched right up through the town park, which, as I say, was known as Longmeadow, and it stretched right up to the town park, almost to what is now the railway embankment. So it was something the order, that part of it was something of about 32, 33 acres. But at the same time, it is a flat, low-lying part of the river plain, and as such then became a very attractive sports grounds for all manner of sports from the early mid-19th century. And the thing was that anybody who wanted it, they had games of cricket, there was horse racing, and eventually, of course, there was football, hurling and rugby, soccer. And anyone that wanted to organise events, there was athletic events and so on as well.
Huge attendances.
They had huge attendances, but the point was that it was all controlled from the castle here. Oh. Permission had to be got every time for any event.
Was
from
it ever
the
refused?
In the castle. Oh, indeed, it was many a time refused.
Oh, was it?
There were issues to do with the great and the good around Mallow would have been concerned about the type of people people that would have come into the town, the publicans taking advantage of it, and drunken behaviour and this kind of old stuff going on, so they alleged. So it took right up to the early years of the 20th century before the Urban Council were able to get control over the events in the town park.
Ronan said, "Libera nos a malo, deliver us from harm," a headline in the then Cork Examiner from April 1983. Mexican pilot.
And either landing in Cork or Shannon.
He was running out of fuel here.
Absolutely, ran out of fuel. And Simi was a master feat of piloting. You know that he landed in Mallow Racecourse, you know, saw the home straight, as it were, and got the plane down, and he was here.
He was here for 39 days.
Yeah. And he was. He was a celebrity around the place, He was paraded around. Of course, anyway, it was a huge big deal. And still is, if something like that happened, it would also be. There was actually a restaurant up town, Carl O'Cannes, because of him, and his family have been back. And
Pat Butler and RTE had a report about it, and he said it was the greatest tourist attraction to have hit the town of Mallow in living memory.
Yeah, I suppose since the Rakes boys were here a long time ago, it might have been. It was a big deal. Emergency landing, a jet inside in the racecourse, and then
£7 million jet.
£7 million, and then built a runway because he had to hang on. He had to hang around with the plane where the passengers went wherever they needed to go, so he had to stay with his plane, and then they built the runway out in the racecourse, and then it was a big day the day he took off as well. He was flying and all the people wrote waving goodbye to him.
Did I read where his ashes spread here?
They came back lately. I don't think all of them, you know, but they brought home
some of the ashes.
I think so, you know. But they kept up the connection with Mallow, you know, and he would have made lots of friends in Mallow and that.
One of the other things that you've done of the planting here, John, or is it? There's a lot of hawthorn occurring here now.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't part of the original plan, but the council put in hawthorn then later on along by some of the bridges and that kind of thing. Hawthorn by itself, it's a great hedgerow tree. I mean, it's brilliant for wildlife, it's brilliant for insects, it's brilliant for nesting. Yeah. Most birds nest about 5 foot. They don't want to be on the ground because you can get predation from foxes and that kind of thing. And you don't want to be too high up in the air because buzzards or crows might have a go at you. So about 5 foot is the ideal height for nests for trees, and then it's great for, you know...
It's great protection. I mean, they're impossible to bloody well work. I know that we have a hedge at home and we unfortunately put some hawthorn into it. But to try and get at, to kill it out, you've got cut and scraped.
You're going to lose a bit of skin, that's for sure. I mean, you have the thorns themselves. And that's why they were a big component, and still are a big component, of hedgerows in farms. Because before barbed wire, hawthorn hedgerows were the way they put in those hedgerows to do that kind of work. And I suppose the great thing about it is you see it now at the moment. All the white flowers that are in a lot of the white flowers that you see in the hedges, they're actually blackthorn. So blackthorn, you get the white flowers first, and then
the
leaves. Mm. With the white thorn, then you get the leaf first, and then you get that profusion of those white and maybe pinky flowers in May.
Indeed. Kevin Healy, as Kevin Myers was saying there earlier, Sports Day in Mallow in 1869, one of the events, throwing the cricket ball. Cricket was a part of life here and in many towns. It was a loss. It was a very colourful, very skilled game that we've lost touch with.
Well, yes, it was kind of associated with the gentry, you know, and there was quite a lot of them around Mallow because...
You had five clubs here, I believe. Five cricket clubs in Mallow.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
One of my memories of the 1980s here was the museum that used to be down either attached to or a part of the old castle.
Yeah.
What's happened to all of that material and that exhibition? Is that...
So my memory of that is that it didn't last long. It was set up even earlier than that, as I recall, in late 1960s, with the help of the then Brigadier Jeffson. And the idea was to have a permanent museum there, but it didn't last long. I think there... Why I can't say. But most of the material came from the castle here and came back into the castle again.
It's a very necessary thing to hear, isn't it? When there is such a tremendous story. That
there have been discussions. There is plans to restore the town hall in the centre of the town of Mallow. And in that, I've heard discussions about potential for museum. Are part of the new castle. I mean, there's an awful lot of work, as you can see, done on the exterior of the building, but there's a lot of work to be done on the interior now.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
Walking in Mallow Castle Town Park in the hours around sunrise to experience the dawn chorus started at around 5. Now it's 8 o'clock. Today's programme was recorded on March the 30th. Your story on Mallow Castle Town Park for future programmes. Text 083 300 3300 or you can ring 066 712 3666. We've walked down from the castle to some of the 24,000 trees. We're down at the eastern end of the planted area of the park. Forester John Casey, you were explaining the philosophy there. I mean, the planting is back from the path and you have throughways, and at the same time you're creating a forestry sort of environment here.
Yeah, so I suppose what happened was, like I said, I'm a forestry advisor with Chagas, and Mallow Development Partnership approached me and asked for some advice. So what we looked at was we wanted people to use the forest all the time, and so we want them to be comfortable. So there was paths here, so we wanted to plant the trees a distance from the path, mm-hmm. so that they didn't seem too intimidating as the trees came up. But we didn't want to leave open gaps around the woods as well, and through the woods. People can walk through there, but during the summertime then the grass is left uncut, and it's a huge benefit for biodiversity, for insects, for butterflies, for bees, for all the kind of pollinators as well. But the whole idea is that you want people to come out and enjoy themselves here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the trees then, you mentioned about the thousands of trees that are here, they're mostly oak and birch, but there's some holly and there's other species as well. And the idea is that you plant them close together initially, and it forces the oak trees up into the air, and then after time you're going to thin them out. When you thin them out, then there's more space underneath. You'll get an understory then of stuff that's shade-bearing, like maybe beech, but other shrub species in particular, like holly and hazel and that kind of thing. And over time then, what you'll end up with is a more natural woodland that would have been here hundreds of years ago as well.
And this pathway the whole way around is amazing, isn't it?
It is fantastic. I mean, it's a great investment by the Cork County Council. It has allowed people, push cars, buggies, wheelchairs, people out walking, people out running. It's a facility for everybody.
Angler Kevin Healy, Saturday, August the 9th, 2025 was a dark day for anglers on the River Blackwater and some of its tributaries.
Yes, indeed. We had the biggest fish kill in the history of the state on the River Blackwater.
What sort of numbers of fish are you talking about?
Estimated up to 40,000, and primarily trout. They seem to have suffered the most out of whatever contaminant was discharged.
There's no conclusion yet on exactly what happened.
No, and I don't think there will be, because in a flowing river, if you're not on the scene when it's happened, there was 3 days lost from the reports. I think I was the first to report that some person came to my door and they said they saw dead trout at Mallow Bridge, and I rang IFI. And that was the first announcement, so there was 3 days apparently lost.
Mm-hmm. On opening day this year, you had catch and release?
We did. We said it would be prudent to be on the river, because if we just stayed away, we're still in the dark as regards what's left there.
So are there fish there?
There are. But now it's very hard to say over one day fishing. We'd need to go the whole year to see the different months and the different returns. But we're heartened to see that there's still life there, you know.
Apart from an annual football engagement with Kerry, alternating between Cork and Killarney, which generally includes Mallow men, folklore includes epic, sometimes exaggerated stories of local hurling matches, such as when Mallow defeated Black Rock in a legendary contest.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I can't remember much of it. It was in 1928, I think. It's folklore, is right. Well, it's not folklore. When Mallow beat Black Rock, But it's funny, do you know, the way you'd hear of names, and I used to hear names growing up because my grandfather would have been from Baldahin or Baldan, and he would say that here, and there used to be huge street leagues that time, you know, and you'd hear of Baldan and Bridge Street and Beecher Street, and you'd hear of all these, and I used to actually hear of names, you know, from those times, and like Hobler Donovan and Fecker Donovan and Gus Moriarty. And it's funny, like, these people were back in whenever they were back, and they would have been part of that in the famous time when Mallow beat Black Rock. And it's just funny, the times then, not everyone would be going to their matches, and they send off pigeons, and I didn't realise that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So the lads would go, whoever was going to the match would go over with pigeons, and then write the half time score or after 15 minutes send a pigeon home, and they'd be waiting for pigeons to see the score after a quarter of an hour and for half an hour, and you know, so they'd get the result before the people would be home before the match. And someone saying that time was it about Mallow beating Black Rock, and someone coming in and, you know, by what, and someone says a miracle. but even going back to the names, I remember we'd say one of those names now, it was August Moriarty, and I think he's the stepsister of Joan Denise Moriarty, you know, who founded the Irish Ballet Company. Yeah. And I was looking at an old picture of my father one time. We were going through the names, and the name came up for Gus Moriarty. And I said, that's not Gus Moriarty. And then he goes, how do you mean it's not Gus Moriarty? I says, Gus Moriarty had kind of blondie hair, kind of long enough hair. Yeah. And then he started laughing at me. Like, the way you picture people in your in your head. Indeed. And I had a picture of this man who was dead years and years before I was born. But I was questioning, was it the right man because of the pictures? But, yeah, famous day, lovely. I suppose, was it the Castle Poet, or maybe one of them wrote a song about it?
You got to sing a song? Beat. Sing a verse?
No, I won't sing a verse. No, you're mad for the verses, no.
I am. I'm not getting anywhere, though. John, it's a wonderful time of the year, and I know this is going to be broadcast a month after we've actually recorded it, but it's a time of the year where you shouldn't miss a day from being in the open, because there's so much change happening all the time, and it's so wonderful, the colours, the intensity of colour, as we speak at the moment, the leaves all coming out here.
Yeah, I would say this is my favourite time of the year. I mean, you can literally feel nature surge. You feel that moment where you can see the leaves coming out. You can hear the bird call, which is at its probably highest now at the moment before they get distracted by raising clutches of young and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you can see it in the grass. You can see it in the trees. Like, literally, the sap is rising. You have all this water being drawn up from the rooting system up into the trees. And then you have the sugar that's starting to pump around the trees themselves. And it's like this huge chemical factory is just kicking off, and it's going to drive it on way into the summer. So yeah, it's a great time of the year to be around.
It's wonderful, wonderful. And as I said already, I mean, the bird song, it's now at a quarter past eight. They're still singing away. They're still great bird song.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is usually the time of the year because they get, like humans, they get distracted by raising their young afterwards. Yeah. They're not quite as active. Ronan hasn't been out in years. But having said that, yeah.
And sap is up.
The sap is up. And you can see it in the bird life, but you can see it in everything else as well. You can see it in the foxes out in the fields. You can see it in
the
squirrels.
We saw a fox driving the road from Killarney this morning.
You can see it in the squirrel. You see red squirrel here. So, like, you know, there's a wonderful variety. And, yeah, it's a great time.
And you were mentioning otters, was it? Or who was mentioning seeing otters?
Oh, yeah, you'd see otters here sometimes. Certainly during COVID, the small stream there, I've seen otters there, and I've seen them further down the river. I've seen them actually under the Four Arch Bridge in the centre of Mallow as well, once or twice.
You know, particular times of the day?
Early morning, or kind of under the bridge. It would have been kind of late at night. I suppose it was kind of 10 o'clock.
After dark?
Yeah, it would have been after dark, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kevin Myers, how active was the Civil War here?
Or very, very, very active. It, you know, as we spoke about the War of Independence earlier, once the Civil War broke out, Mallow became a flashpoint. A lot of the war was waged on the railways, on disruption to modes of transport, in particular the railways, and of course it culminated with the destruction of the 10 Arch Bridge viaduct, which broke communication between Cork and Dublin.
And who blew that up?
The IRA blew that up.
Why?
In August. They had this continuing policy of disrupting any means of transport. Mm-hmm. The railways were were vitally important, and the junction at Mallow was a crucial junction because it was known as the crossroads of Munster, and it serviced rail traffic both north, south, east and west. Mm-hmm. Any damage that was done to the railway infrastructure in the greater Mallow area was going to be extremely, extremely difficult to mm-hmm. cope with for normal trade. And so it was all for the remainder of 1922 into 1923.
Kevin, you were watching something flying. Come in much closer to the microphone. Much closer. What was it? Something
flying? A cormorant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're not very popular with anglers because...
eat their weight in fish.
Well, yes, and they compete against us, but they have more right than us because they need it to survive. We're doing it as a pastime.
Well, there was a time you needed it to survive as well.
Well, we did, and we did survive. I'm proof.
We're going to move on to our last stop. We'll talk to you from there in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Against the backdrop of the dawn chorus, sunrise on our recording morning of March the 30th, as I said already, it was 7:15. A bird song, best at the moment, the hour before sunrise is the best. Now our last stop at Lover's Leap, high over the Blackwater, wonderful panorama of the Blackwater underneath, at the eastern end of the Mallow Castle Town Park. Kevin Healy, would be fishing. What's that all about?
Yeah, that was a kind of a leisurely pastime of fishing where you just sit under a rock like this.
Yeah.
And usually in the hot summer's day, the trout would be in on the shade, you'd catch blue wattles. And how you'd get them is you'd have meat that's going off and the larva, and you'd harvest them. They'd mount them on a hook and just sit in and let them float down. And up comes the trout and bang. Nice, leisurely.
Ronan, the story of Lover's Leap.
That John Spillane song about Lover's Leap.
I'll give you the first couple of lines. Yeah.
About a mile from Mallow Town, there is a place called Lover's Leap, a beauty spot of great renown, the jagged rock that rises steep, a lonely cliff above the deep black water. That's the song is about. Now, you'd hear, and whether it's folklore or whatever, but a Catholic and Protestant couple fell in love and their families would not consent. And so, through the jigs and the reels, they found that their only way that their love could survive was to come up here and jump and leave this world forevermore and reach the deep black water.
Was there a further dimension to that story? That was it the girl's father was following them?
Yeah. No, I've often heard variations of it, you know, yeah. And I don't know.
His intention was to murder the son. They saw him and then
jumped themselves. So, yeah, I've heard that as well. So, I don't know which. You'd nearly prefer the more romantic one that they decided rather than being chased by a father wanting to murder one of them, you know, yeah. So...
John, there are so many things here. I mean, there's a lot of laurel round about us, which is taking over. There's some magnificent oak as we were coming up, long, straight oak. And as we left the woodland down below, birch was also a feature of the woodland here.
Yeah, so birch would be what's called the pioneer species. So it's one of the ones that would first come along. They're very light demanding. It's a succession then of species afterwards. You'd have things like ash and that kind of thing. And ultimately then you'd have the oak. So what you have here then is you have planted oak and beech. You know they're planted because if you look at the trees themselves, you can see they're very straight with very light side branching. So what they've done there is they, at one stage, they did a level of pruning of the side branches to get nice straight timber. The reason behind that, of course, is less knots, more valuable timber. So some of the oak that are here, you know, they're 150, nearly 200 years old. They're veneer quality oak. If you were running this as a commercial wood, they would actually be very valuable oak. Now, they're very valuable for biodiversity anyway as they stand. The issue, I suppose, for the woodland itself is you have a lot of mature trees, but you don't have any juvenile recruitment. You don't have a great understory, and that's because of the laurel. Laurel is very light demanding, and it's killing off any regeneration underneath it. It also has a tendency to do kind of a bit like chemical warfare. It introduces a chemical from its rooting system into the soil, and that suppresses the germination of other plants as well and stops them germinating. And then with the shade as well, it means that there's no understory. So really to revive...
Same effect as rhododendron.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, what you're looking at really is to regenerate this, you need to cut out the laurel and create a bit of light into the canyon, down onto the ground floor.
Indeed, indeed. Kevin Myers, in contrast to the lovely story that Ronald was telling us there, in February 1921, the IRA killed the wife of RIC Captain W.H. King during a botched assassination attempt on her husband near the Mallow Railway Station.
That is correct, yeah. King and his wife went to the hotel, which was right beside the railway station at Mallow. It was known as the Royal Hotel. It's now the offices of Cork County Council. And they went there on a particular evening, and following their visit there, they were walking back down from the railway station when the IRA opened fire and erroneously shot Mrs. King, and she died that night. She actually is buried outside here in the local graveyard in Gould's Hill. It was a particularly tragic affair, as ever. There was reprisals. There was Black and Tans stationed in a house that they had taken over just farther down the hill, down in the west end of Mallow, and they proceeded to the railway station and carried out some shooting and terror attacks on the railway, on the men working in the railway at the time. Yeah, so it was a tragic situation.
Kevin Healy, your father was teaching you and your brother how to fish down here.
Yeah, when we were school going, and this was a long trek now from where we live, and down at the other end of this wood or rock now, there's at the time you go through an orchard, Golden's Orchard it was called, and then you came onto the low ground, and it was an exceptionally good place to fish, so that's where we were taught how to fly fish. And my father set up a competition between myself and Hugh, and that's where we cut our teeth for fly fishing.
Your modesty prevents you from saying who won.
Yes, I let that to your imagination now, seeing that I'm telling the story. Yeah, this is the spot was very famous for the would-be fishing, because you had the cover of the trees for the shade for the fish. And
Ronan, do you have a particular ambition for Mallow Castle Town Park?
The council has plans, like the whole vision of buying it, the whole walk that we're on, the footpaths, everything about it. And I accept that it's not going to happen tomorrow. Yeah, you know, you can see now all the pointing done on the new castle. We'll say that's been done bit by bit, and they will have plans for inside. But in general, like the plans for Mallow Town Hall, for example, you know, there's going to be a new theatre and a centre there, and then what Kevin's saying, you might have the museum there, you might have the tourist office, and it's multi-million. It's going to cost, you know, whatever.
But
a building
like the Newcastle is a high-profile building. You know, it's a building that is very much in the public eye. I mean, it presumably should be used for something that people will use. That,
and it will be.
It's wonderful. It's like, wonderful. The facilities is wonderful.
And even if it's not being used inside at the moment, you know, like open her up.
Yeah. But the building looks wonderful.
It does, but it didn't always look like that. No. You know what I mean? And we all commented this morning, looking at it with the new pointing, the work done and the roof and everything. It looks
magnificent.
It absolutely does. And it didn't look that way a number of years ago.
I hope
you know?
The wood panelling that I remember from the hallway is reinstated.
Yeah, it's still there.
Right? Is it?
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, I mean, little enough has happened the inside, you know, because every bit of conservation work now is like, it's not like decorating your sitting room at home, you know, everything, you know, is the expense of everything. And you'd hear quotes at times, and it's mind boggling
money.
But Frank, it will be used, like,
great,
you know,
great.
It will happen.
John, being lucky enough to be involved in a project like the planting of the park here, it must be a great feeling of achievement.
Yeah, I'd have to say, professionally, it's been very rewarding. But on a personal level as well, living in Mallow, I've really enjoyed working with other people in the community. I think it's a great asset. I think you're looking at, right, it's planted and it's a young woodland, but it's going to become a forest and a forest ecosystem over time. There's the opportunity then to have it as a living classroom. It's in the centre of town. I mean, and I've gone with a couple of schools previously, gone and done a couple of walks with them. So it's within walking distance of the schools. Yeah. You can talk about science, you can talk about society, you can talk about all the good things that make up what it is to live in Mallow. Yeah. And it's all there in the middle of your town.
Kevin Byers, last word. As John was saying there, in a historic sense as well, Mallow is an open-air classroom, isn't it? I mean, there are so many dimensions of history round about that you can literally tell the story of thousands of years if you go back to the Neolithic.
Yeah, you can, of course, in looking into material and in researching stuff, your, I suppose, local historians are always bemoaning the loss of so much material over the years. But that being said, as we said earlier on, there is still material coming our way. There are still people, and there's a growing interest, if anything, in people who wish to research and look into other aspects of the story of Mallow. And we are finding in the club, in the Mallow Field Club, that there's more people expressing interest in providing us with material that we can find ways to publish, which is a wonderful development really over the years. And a big factor in that has been the use of the internet. On the one hand, a lot of the work you can do on your desktop. And on the other hand, it has to be said that both local authorities, county council, county library, and then more at the national level, the National Archives and National Library, have become very, very customer focused, if you like. They've become very willing to assist in local history research. So we're you know, our aim is to leave a legacy of how we came to be and how our town and how our, whether it is our castle or our walks, how they came to be, why they're there, and hopefully that legacy will be appreciated in future generations.
Tremendous. Mallow Castle Town Park, all 9.5 hectares, 23.5 acres. The entrance is in Mallow Town, the ruined castle with roots in the 12th century. 24,000 trees planted over the past 10 and 20 years. The very fine old trees. The 2.5 mile, 3.5 kilometre stretch of the Blackwater, and double that length of wonderful cement pathway. The 18th century New Mallow Castle, the unique herd of white deer, walking through new and old woods, ending up on Lover's Leap as we are now. It's worth the special trip to Mallow, and if, like me, you happen to be passing through it, it's a perfect place to stretch your legs. There's no place like it anywhere else. My special thanks to my fellow walkers since 5 this morning, and now it's 9 o'clock, in fact, it's longer than I thought. To historian Kevin Myers, who met me twice, to Rona Sheehan, who opened doors, to John Casey, whose enthusiasm was infectious, and Kevin Healy with 70 years of fishing stories, and Claire Barr, Municipal District Officer, who went out of her way. From me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in May, when Paddy Bush will take us to his special places, traced to the mist of time in his remarkable study, The Amargan Step. On today's programme, programme coordinator on location sound, Siobhan Lewis. In post-production, Brendan Lewis. Thanks for your company. Pat Kelly will be with you after the news.